And now, welcome to Today's Business on 1360 WCHL with Jeffrey Hart. And now, here is Jeffrey Hart.
Welcome to Today's Business on 1360 WCHL. I'm your host, Jeffrey Hart, and today we're going to talk about nanotechnology and nanobiotechnology. We're lucky to have with us John Harden and Laura Faulkner. John is the Executive Director of the Office of Science and Technology, which is part of the North Carolina Department of Commerce, and Laura is the Director of Innovation Projects at the Center of Innovation for Nanobiotechnology. John, would love to start with you. Tell us a little bit about what is nanotechnology.
Well, thank you very much, Jeffrey. I'm going to give you the formal definition that comes straight from the National Nanotechnology Initiative. And this is found on their website. It says that nanotechnology is the understanding and control of matter at dimensions between approximately 1 and 100 nanometers, where unique phenomena enable novel applications. Now, you're probably asking, well what's a nanometer? What's 1 nanometer and what's 100 nanometers? The prefix nano means billionth. And so 1 nanometer is 1/1 billionth of a meter. And to give you an idea how small that is, essentially atoms, one atom is about 1 nanometer large, a little bit smaller. A DNA molecule is about 10 nanometers. Wide. And so that's the scale we're talking about, basically atoms and molecules. And nature has worked at that level ever since the beginning of time, but man has worked at that level only in a deliberate way, only in the most recent, say, 40 or 50 years.
Right, right. And talk to me a little bit about what it means to work at that level. I mean, in summary, we're talking about working at the atomic or the molecular level and manipulating materials at that level to do different things.
Right.
Give us some examples of what we're talking about, just so we have a good frame of reference of what we're talking about in nanotechnology.
Okay. In that definition that I read, you'll note that there is, after the comma, it says where unique phenomena enable novel applications. And that's what's so interesting and important about nanotechnology is we've been working at the macro level and the micro level for a long time. But when you work at the nano level, truly matter does take on different properties and enables new things to happen. And so a material that's not magnetic at the macro level or the micro level may become magnetic at the nano level. And friction properties can change, or the rigidity of materials can change. And so by working at that level, and it requires specialized equipment to work at that level, we can literally create things that have not existed before by recombining atoms and molecules in a certain way, or we can enhance things that already exist by changing their chemical or physical structure. And so it's really about engineering from the bottom up in a way to create things that haven't existed before.
And Laura, tell us a little bit about, I guess this would be a subspecialty or a subgroup of nanotechnology, and that would be nanobiotechnology.
Correct. So nanobiotechnology is exactly what John described, except nanotechnology applied to biological and life science problems. So examples can range from surface plasmon resonance with gold nanoparticles used for diagnostic applications. Gold nanoparticles, the surface plasmon resonance characteristics, were used hundreds of years ago in stained glass. But now the same property of unique light emittance properties at the nanoscale are being applied for diagnostic to applications to be able to detect cancer and other things.
So we can create materials with nanoparticles that allow us to discover or detect cancer or other types of diseases. Is that what you mean?
That's one example. There's many other examples, including drug delivery systems, which is a huge application area in nanobiotechnology. So the when you're at the nanotech scale, you begin to have the ability to manipulate bioavailability and to specifically target cancer or other types of cells so that you can have improved drug delivery or improved drug function.
I see. Tell us a little bit more about the organization that you're with and what you are doing in this field.
So I work at the Center of Innovation for Nanobiotechnology, and we're a four-person nonprofit. We were started by the North Carolina Biotechnology Center, and our core mission is to accelerate commercialization of nanobiotechnology. We're really focused on the commercialization part. There's a lot of really great innovation and R&D happening in this space, and we want to help those technologies and those products make it onto the market and have an impact that will improve human life.
And does your organization work with John with the Office of Science and Technology?
Absolutely. John Harden's on our board of directors, and we also work with the Department of Commerce and the Board of Science and Technology for the North Carolina Nanotechnology Commercialization Conference, mm-hmm. which is coordinated by the Board of Science and Technology.
Right. And tell us a little bit more about the Office of Science and Technology. And generally, it's an organization that administers a grants program for a variety of different types of businesses for innovative products. But tell us a little bit more about that group.
Right. The Office of Science and Technology is just one division or office within the North Carolina Department of Commerce. We have a staff of five. Three of those people are dedicated solely to our grant programs. So we have a two-part function overall. Number one is to administer grant programs that help small businesses develop and commercialize innovative technologies. One of those programs, the One North Carolina Small Business Program, provides matching grants to companies that have received a certain type of federal grant that allows them or enables them to commercialize their technologies. And that's so important to these small businesses because getting a technology off the ground and out the door takes a lot of time, effort, and money. And money is often the most lacking element. So government assistance helps with that to help these small businesses. The other grant program is the North Carolina Green Business Fund. And our staff spends a lot of time administering those two grant programs. The latter helps companies commercialize their technologies, but they have to be green technologies. The other function of the Office of Science and Technology is to staff the North Carolina Board of Science and Technology, which is a strategic board that advises state policymakers, the legislature and the governor primarily, on the role of technology-based economic development in the growth of North Carolina's economy.
And so both of these organizations together, obviously the Office of Science and Technology has a much broader mandate dealing with a variety of types of businesses, but COIN, Laura's organization, and the Office of Science and Technology together, you're attempting to help innovation in this area of nanotechnology, to commercialize it. And so there's really an economic development model at play here. Is that correct?
Yes. And a lot of the nanobiotechnology that's occurring in the state is early stage, and it needs help in a lot of different ways to help make it onto the market. And so COIN is a targeted resource to help facilitate that.
I see. And do you operate any kind of, is it more mentoring and consulting, or do you have a funding aspect to it as well for these early stage companies?
We do not have a funding aspect at this time, but we try to be agile and help companies and university researchers in any way that we can. And we have many different programs ranging from events that we host. Every 2 months we have the NanoBio Executive Roundtable Series, which has been a very successful event, bringing together key thought leaders from well outside of just North Carolina to come and talk about key issues that they're facing in commercializing their technologies. And we also are putting together a web-based portal called NanoBioConnect. One of the first things that I did when I joined COIN was to try to get a grip on what does this space look like, who's doing what stage of development are they at, what are their needs, what are their partnership opportunities. And those were things that were really difficult to find in any one place in any consolidated way. And so we built that portal called NanoBioConnect to help profile who's doing what and how you can work with them.
That's great. I want to talk a little bit more about that. We have to take a break for a few moments. You're listening to Today's Business on 1360 WCHL. We're with John Harden and Laura Faulkner with the Office of Science and Technology and COIN, respectively.
You're listening to Today's Business on WCHL. Once again, here is Jeffrey Hart.
Welcome back to Today's Business on 1360 WCHL. We're here with John Harden with the Office of Science and Technology in North Carolina and Laura Faulkner, who's with the Center of Innovation. And I always think about this incorrectly. Center of Innovation for Nanotechnology, COIN, is the way they refer to themselves. And we were ending our last segment talking a little bit about the Nano BioConnect portal that you were referencing. Tell us a little bit more about that and what it's attempting to do in North Carolina.
So Nano BioConnect is public-facing, web-based, and it contains profiles of companies that are developing nanobiotechnology, detailed profiles with the key statistics about how the company is organized, what the technology is, and it also contains interesting information about how that company has partnered in the past and what their forward-looking partnering interests are near term. And when I talk to the companies, I tell them to please be specific. Don't say everything and don't say money. Tell me something that's actionable that people can say, yes, I could do that. I could work with them. And we're also including profiles of the university research centers that are doing nanobiotech R&D and what technologies they have that are available for licensing, what unique resources they have, how they work with industry, and also profiles of service providers in the space. One thing that I heard repeatedly when I talked to the nanobiotech community was that they didn't know where to go to find service providers that were savvy with nano, whether that's contract R&D, contract manufacturing, legal services, or even as something as simple as insuring their products, finding an insurance provider that's nano savvy so that they can pay reasonable rates for insuring their products.
Jeffrey, I wanted to follow up on that and emphasize why functions like that are so important, especially with respect to nanotechnology. People often refer to nanotechnology as a discipline or an industry or a field, and it's really none of those. It really spans all of those. It's a boundary-spanning technology because it's really a scale of activity. And so you can have lots of academic disciplines, chemistry, physics, biology, engineering, even the social sciences that deal with nanotechnology, just as you can have multiple industries that can benefit from and use nanotechnology, whether it's auto parts or medical technologies or solar panels. And so when you have such a diverse technology that cuts across so many different sectors, all the sectors are typically internally focused, and they often miss the things that are at the boundaries that may be relevant. And what they really need is information. And so if you can have an organization that spans all of that, such as COIN, that can fill those gaps, make those connections, that's critical for helping things happen that might not otherwise happen. It could be a catalyst and create a synergy that might not otherwise exist.
Give me some examples of the types of companies or the type of startup organizations that are using this portal or seeking the type of information you're looking for and are attempting to use nanotechnology in their business and in their products and services.
So we've had visitors to NanoBioConnect from every continent in the 2 months since NanoBioConnect was launched. And users range from small companies doing competitive intelligence research to major companies looking at interesting opportunities. And even students doing research. We have an international student that's looking at North Carolina's nanobiotechnology sector and comparing the growth of nanobiotechnology in North Carolina to the growth of the biotech sector in North Carolina. And we expect the results from that in a couple of weeks.
Oh, that's great. And so I think from a medical standpoint, We mentioned diagnostics, you know, actually trying to diagnose specific diseases. We talked about drug delivery, where maybe having a product that uses nanotechnology to deliver a drug to a patient rather than, you know, a pill or something like that going through that system, a more direct delivery device. Are there other types of applications for nanotechnology in the medical field?
Absolutely. So medical devices is another huge area where nanotechnology is growing applications. A lot of nanotechnology for medical devices is nano coatings. Mm. So coatings to make stents more safe and to elute drugs in a better fashion, or nanotechnology used as actual bone growth substitutes to stimulate bone healing and wound healing, and nanotechnology to prevent bacterial infections in severe wounds or even in over-the-counter wound dressings.
Those are great examples. And are we seeing that kind of activity here in North Carolina, both on a research and development level, but also actually moving out into companies?
Absolutely. And one of the really exciting areas where nanotechnology is growing into its own is in nano-enabled tissue engineering and regenerative medicine. And there's a huge resource for that at Wake Forest University and the Wake Forest Institute for Regenerative Medicine. A lot of what they use for nano-enabled tissue engineering is scaffolds to help grow the tissues that they're using.
Right. We have a number of companies. It's hard to know exactly how many in North Carolina that are working with nanotechnology. We have an informal count that our office has taken, and it's at least 70 or 80 companies that we know of throughout North Carolina that are working with nanotechnology. But that's an informal count. I have a sense that the number that are using nanotechnology is much larger than that. And it's hard to know the exact number because it's not as though the companies advertise, you know, hey, we use nanotechnology. They don't have a sign, and they don't often have nano in their name. And so it's really, again, working at a scale of activity. And so there are anything from large companies such as VF Corporation, which is a textile company. They have multiple products, you know, that may not use nanotechnology, but they may have 5% of their products that do. And so an example of that would be if you have a shirt that's stain resistant or pants that are wrinkle resistant, there's a decent chance that those properties come from nanotechnology. And that may be a portion of what VF produces. But there are other companies in North Carolina that are exclusively focused on nanotechnology. One of those would be Liquidia Technologies, based here in Chapel Hill. But they span throughout North Carolina. The majority of them happen to be in high-tech centers or in metro areas, but there are even companies in rural regions. An example of one of those would be my office has funded through the One North Carolina Small Business Program a company called United Protective Technologies. And the name of the project that we funded is the following: Advanced Canopy Window Materials for Improved Helicopter and Aircraft Survivability. So this is an example of nano coatings. And I don't know the exact details of the project, but my understanding is that that the windows in helicopters can have special properties and need to have special properties because they need to be scratch resistant, they need to be super light, super strong, they need to reflect light in a certain way. And all of those properties can be enhanced with nanotechnology. And so this company is developing new coatings that can bring out those capabilities that wouldn't exist otherwise.
You know, I think those are great examples. I think there's often a lot of confusion that nanotechnology is something not only new, but that is really sort of industry specific. And it doesn't sound like either of those assumptions are correct. I mean, nanotechnology's been around for long periods of time. Maybe we didn't identify it as such, and maybe we didn't exactly know we were working with nanotechnology, but we were creating properties that had or creating materials that had specific properties, and it's really because of something going on at the atomic or molecular level. But then also the sky, it seems like, is the limit in terms of the types of industries that can put this into play. It's, you know, like you said, you know, everything from windows and plastics to medicine to agriculture, other areas as well.
Right, exactly. We are very much in the early stages of the nanotechnology revolution, if you want to call it that. You know, nature has been working at that level since the beginning of time. Humans have been exploiting nano-based properties for thousands of years. Stained glass essentially uses nanotechnology to produce colors that are rich and unique. But the ability to actively and consciously and deliberately work at that level has only been around for 20 or 30 years. And one reason that it's really picked up in the last decade or so is because the U.S. Government formed the National Nanotechnology Initiative beginning in the year 2001, I believe, but it really was formalized in 2003 with a large effort that came out of the Clinton administration, if I remember correctly, or actually the Bush administration, that really created the largest, single largest funded science initiative since the space race. And there are something like 25 federal agencies that are involved in funding nanotech R&D. That's all coordinated through the National Nanotechnology Coordination Office. And what its job is to do is to really coordinate this activity, help it take place at a level that it wouldn't take place if there were not that level of coordination. And the U.S. is not the only government doing this. Lots of other countries, especially Asian countries and European countries, are involved in the private sector as well.
Well, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with today's business on 1360 WCHL.
You're listening to Today's Business on WCHL. Once again, here is Jeffrey Hart.
Welcome back to Today's Business on 1360 WCHL. We're with John Harden and Laura Falconer, and we're talking about nanotechnology today. And I want to come to something that Laura, you and I were talking about a little bit at the break, and make sure that we address it for the audience. And that is the idea that nanotechnology really is an enabling technology. It's not a product in and of itself. It is a method of creating a product or a service. If you could talk a little bit more about that, just to better our understanding of nanotechnology.
Right. In the vast majority of situations, nanotechnology is not the product. It's an enabling technology that makes the product better, cheaper, faster, or what have you. And so there's actually a huge opportunity in nanotechnology for cross-fertilization of innovation across multiple industries. And one example of that would be the agricultural industry, where they're using nanotechnology to deliver pesticides, herbicides, genes, and various other compounds. And the same technologies actually have applications in the biomedical space and vice versa. There's a few companies that are starting to capitalize on this, but that's still a really budding opportunity area. And the agricultural technologies, delivery technologies, are actually pretty well developed because they're not faced with some of the same regulatory issues that the biomedical space is faced with. And so there might be some lessons that each other can learn.
And one thing I wanted to come back to that you mentioned very early on, and something I'm not sure that I fully appreciated, is that sometimes when we're talking about nanotechnology, we're talking about materials that take on new properties or that are different from what they have when you're looking at them from a macro level. You know, gold is, you have a hunk of gold, but when you start getting down to the molecular level, and I don't know if that's the quantum level or whatever, but you actually have different properties. You said, for example, something can become magnetic when it wasn't before. Is that a common phenomenon in nanotechnology, that you're finding new characteristics or attributes for properties when you get down to that level?
Right. An example that I gave earlier had to do with textiles. Cotton, as you know, is not naturally water repellent. But you could have a 100% cotton shirt that is almost completely water resistant or stain resistant, hydrophobic, just by manipulating the structure of the cotton at the molecular level. And so you've got the same material, but it has new properties. Another example would be carbon nanotubes, which are tubes at the nano level. The tube itself isn't necessarily at the nano level, but the structures within it are. And the advantage of nanotubes is that they're essentially frictionless. And so you can have electricity run through them at a much faster pace and creates less heat. Mm-hmm. And that's, again, by changing the structure of how carbon is assembled.
I see. And well, let's move the discussion towards how all of this comes together and affects North Carolina. And we talked a little bit about the commercialization and the economic development efforts of COIN and the Office of Science and Technology and what you're trying to do to facilitate commercialization of innovation in these areas. Tell us a little bit about the landscape in North Carolina and what types of companies are being formed. Where is this R&D being produced and how is it being spun out into the marketplace?
Good question. The Office of Science and Technology back in 2005 produced a roadmap for nanotechnology in North Carolina's 21st century economy. And we produced that on the heels of the U.S. National Nanotechnology Initiative. An important meeting was held up in Washington in 2003. I was invited to that meeting, and they pulled together people such as myself from various states to talk about the National Nanotechnology Initiative and to encourage states to go out and encourage that activity at their level. And so what we did was we followed up with this roadmap. We convened a group of 30 experts throughout the state and produced a report that essentially told the world, particularly policymakers, what nanotechnology was, why it was important, what North Carolina's strengths and opportunities were, and what were some steps we could take to advance nanotechnology. In any sort of technology development, particularly an interdisciplinary one such as nanotechnology, takes place in a broader economic development innovation ecosystem. And that's what we recommended in the report was 22 different recommendations for how we could enhance R&D activity related to nanotechnology, how we could enhance commercialization activity. So for example, with the former, we could have improved facilities. The state could invest in facilities, and they've done that. For example, with the Joint School of Nanoscience and Nanoengineering, which is state-supported, and it's a joint school between North Carolina A&T State University as well as UNC Greensboro in Greensboro, and it's being built as we speak. Another way we can do that is to provide early-stage funding through grant programs such as what we run to help them develop and commercialize their technologies. Another thing we need to focus on is education at all levels, K through 12, university level, and even postgraduate. And so the report recommended several ways to strengthen all of those areas. Overall, North Carolina fares very well in terms of nanotechnology activity. It's hard to get a read of exactly which states are the strongest. Different people have different opinions. But one organization that has taken a pretty systematic approach to evaluating this is the Project on Emerging Nanotechnologies, which is a group based out of Washington, D.C. They recently ranked North Carolina 8th in the nation in terms of nanotechnology activity, and that's based on the number of university centers and institutes working with nanotechnology, as well as the number of companies that were working with nanotechnology. I'll have one other comment, and then I'll hand it over to Laura. But one of the reasons that North Carolina ranks so high, in addition to the company and economic activity, is just the wide range of universities in this state that are working in nanotechnology. Obviously, the Triangle-based universities, NC State University, UNC Chapel Hill, and Duke are very active, but other universities as well, from the east, such as East Carolina University, to the west, Western Carolina University. UNC Charlotte has a nanoscale science PhD program, and they all have different strengths. And that's one of the strengths of North Carolina is when you add up all those universities, the diversity of expertise is so great that there's something that can benefit virtually everyone in the state.
So I just wanted to comment further about the Pew Charitable Trust and the Project on Emerging Nanotechnologies report. So North Carolina did rank 8th in the nation. The Raleigh-Durham RTP area actually ranked 4th for metro areas. So I actually picked apart their data.
In the entire country.
In the entire country. Mm-hmm. And I picked apart their data and looked at the information that they had, and they actually underestimated the North Carolina sector in both nanotech and nanobiotech by half. So I would be really interested to see later down the line, when states become better at reporting what their actual assets are, where that shakes out. But I feel that North Carolina is certainly positioned well to be a leader in the space, particularly in the biomedical space.
Does it relate this expertise that we have in this state? I can certainly see it affecting the types of products that we have available, the types of technology that we have available that might be interesting to companies. Does it also have to do with personnel? I mean, do we have scientists and others and academics, others in this state where we have a wealth of experience and talent in this area?
Well, that's one of the really great resources about North Carolina, because we have 35 university-based research centers that are doing nanotech and nanobiotech R&D. And there's also a forward thinking going on at our community colleges. Kevin Conley heads up the Forsyth Tech Nanotech Associate's Degree Training Program. So one of the things that was discussed at the annual Nano Business Alliance meeting, I think last year or year before, was that a lot of states are doing really good at creating these top-notch nanotech research programs and churning out PhDs. But what about the technicians that can actually do the bench work and operate the machines that are required to do product development?
Do you think this trickles down to companies who maybe employ these types of and technologies in their business, or may do so, or certainly need these types of employees and these technicians? Do they look at North Carolina as a potential relocation place, or at least setting up an operation in North Carolina?
Yeah, an excellent example of that is a company named High Performance Coatings. It's based in Burlington. They located here right about the time that we released our nanotechnology roadmap. That was back in 2006. And one of the reasons they relocated here from Utah is the worker base and the R&D base related to nanotechnology. What they do is they are a coatings company, and they apply coatings, specialized nano-based coatings, largely to auto parts. And one of the challenges with auto parts, especially high-performing autos and trucks, is that they produce a lot of heat caused by a lot of friction. If you can coat auto parts with a nano-based coating that reduces that friction, you can improve the durability of that product, that component, as well as the quality of it. And so a lot of their nano-coated auto parts are used in NASCAR as well as in 18-wheel trucks. And they've really gotten a lot of benefit out of that. And the primary reason they located here, if you talk to their CEO, is the workforce.
That's interesting. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back. You're listening to Today's Business on 1360 WCHL. We're with John Harden and Laura Falconer, and we're talking about nanotechnology.
You're listening to Today's Business on WCHL. Once again, here is Jeffrey Hart.
Welcome back to Today's Business on 1360 WCHL. We're with John Harden and Laura Falconer. We're talking about nanotechnology and its impact on the business climate in North Carolina. And we ended our last segment talking about a specific company that had moved here to Burlington because of the richness of the nanotechnology field in this area, in this geographic area. A lot of the efforts in nanotechnology from a research and development standpoint, are they taking – you mentioned the university factor. Is it being consummated in universities and then licensed out to industry? Is that how it would traditionally work?
There are lots of different avenues by which it occurs. That is one. Another is just simply through collaboration between universities and companies. For example, NC State University has several user facilities, and that's one of the challenges with nanotechnology is, in order to work at that level, you have to have the right equipment, often costing millions of dollars, and the right personnel. And it's often too much for any one company to take on their own. And so if they can outsource that activity to a university that has those personnel and facilities, they do that. And so for example, at NC State, there's the Analytical Instrumentation Facility. I think that's the correct name. And they do a lot of their work for companies. The Joint School of Nanoscience and Nanoengineering has a company located there now, Advero Technologies. And the primary reason they're located there is to use the facilities at NCA&T and UNC Greensboro through that joint school. And so collaboration helps as well as licensing.
Well, that's it. So it's really the universities in some respects take on a service provider role.
Yes.
That's an outsourcing, because I would imagine that, I mean, any kind of research and development done in this area has got to be very expensive. And so you might comment a little bit on what kind of funding is needed to help foster these companies and to help them grow. It sounds like the types of equipment that they need and the resources they require is vast.
Well, a lot of these companies leverage federal dollars for getting their initial product development done and proof of concept. The NSF is a huge funder of nanotech R&D. The Department of Defense also funds a lot. And then North Carolina has matching funds for some of these federal dollars that are brought in. But there's also an increasing trend towards open innovation and collaborative development, to where these companies can work together in joint development projects and other types of relationships to reduce the cost of development, and also to find the market drivers early on. Instead of create a solution looking for a problem, you know that your development is on track to meet a market need with the specifications that the market will demand.
You mentioned sort of open development. Is that analogous to open source software, where the products that are coming out of it, or the technology coming out of it, is not really protected from an intellectual property standpoint, but is open for use by others?
It's analogous but different in that the IP situation can vary. It can vary from it's very protected amongst the collaborators to a recent project that was done in the Alzheimer's space that was led by the federal government, where the federal government put huge monies in and said, everybody contribute, let's take this 10 leaps forward instead of two baby steps. And everything developed is, there's no IP around it, but you can develop IP around later developments along those steps.
That's great. We're starting to run out of time, and I want to be sure that we talk a little bit about the conference that's coming up about a month from now, late March in Charlotte. If you could tell us a little bit about the nanotechnology conference, John, that'd be great.
Right. That conference is called the North Carolina Nanotechnology Commercialization Conference. This is the third year that my office has been the lead organizer for that, along with several other partners. The first year in 2009, we held it in Raleigh. The second year, we held it in Greensboro. This year, it will be in Charlotte. And the whole purpose of the conference is to help companies commercialize their nanotechnologies, help researchers commercialize their nanotechnologies. And it's really about the intersection between R&D and commercial activity. And so it's a two-day conference. It's being held at UNC Charlotte. If you'd like more information about it, you can go to the website. Just Google North Carolina Nanotechnology Conference, and it will come up, I think, the first item on the search list. But COIN is playing a big role in that, a big section on nanobiotechnology. But we expect about 300 people to attend from across the state and outside of the state, and just a lot of great nanotech content.
That's great. And it sounds like there really aren't a lot of conferences similar to that across the country, that's something that's, I don't want to say necessarily unique to North Carolina, but is certainly a distinguishing factor between us and other states.
I'd say a handful of states have similar types of conferences, but I think ours is somewhat unique and that it focuses on that intersection between R&D and commercial activity. And so we try to intentionally bring together people who might not typically interact, researchers and business people, put them in the same room together for a couple of days, and amazing things come out of those interactions. And so we try to help spur innovation and catalyze it to a level that wouldn't happen on its own.
And Laura, if you could wrap up by telling us a little bit more about if someone needs help in nanotechnology, is looking for some services and some assistance in that regard, what can they get from COIN and where can they find you?
So like I mentioned earlier, COIN tries to be very agile and nimble, and we're happy to help in any way that we possibly can. So any interested companies or individuals, feel free to come visit our website at nc-coin.org and reach out to us for help with everything from identifying funding opportunities, submitting grants, doing market research, and identifying partnerships, and coming to our events. COIN is very involved in the North Carolina Nanotechnology Commercialization Conference, as well as some of our other events. We recruited COMS, which is a large international nanotechnology conference that will be here in August. So there's lots of ways to get involved.
Well, we really appreciate both of you being with us today. We've been talking to John Harden with the North Carolina Office of Science and Technology and Laura Faulkner with the Center of Innovation for Nanobiotechnology. And we look forward to the conference next month. And you've been listening to Today's Business on 1360 WCHL.